anybody remember
the judgment that God had upon Eli's family? What was the judgment? What were the components of the judgment?
Sons would die.
Sons would die.
I think even not have a priest, not any more priest in his family.
That's right. That his sons would perish, and that he would have no one of mature age left in his family going forward. That everybody would die of a premature and early age. They would check out prematurely. Now, before I get into our passage, there's one other piece of the puzzle that isn't mentioned in the text that we need to know. And that's in 1 Samuel chapter 7, starting verse 3. No, actually, it's just verse 3. Then Samuel spoke to all the house of Israel, saying, "If you return to the Lord with all your heart, remove the foreign gods and the Asherah from among you, and direct your hearts to the Lord and serve him alone, and he will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines." That's a piece of the puzzle that we don't get back in chapter 4. But I presume this had been ongoing. This is something that was going on. And this was the spiritual character of the people. All right, back to chapter 4 with 1 Samuel. Thus the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out to meet the Philistines in battle and camped beside Ebenezer, while the Philistines camped in Aphek. I don't think the first sentence goes with the second sentence, and scholars debate about that. I don't think Samuel told them to go out to battle. That's what scholars debate about. I think this bit about the word of Samuel pertains to the last chapter in the judgment of Eli. I don't think it refers to telling them to go out into battle, because we saw the spiritual condition of the people, and the spiritual condition of the people was not good. They were following other gods. They were not there. So how do you think it's going to work out? Yeah, Sharon's saying, no, not going to happen. Not going to work out very well. Verse 2, the Philistines drew up in battle array to meet Israel. When the battle spread, Israel was defeated before the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 men on the battlefield. This was a big battle. 4,000 men died. So Israel just ran for their lives after that. Verse 3, when the people came into the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us take to ourselves from Shiloh the ark of the covenant of the Lord, that it may come among us and deliver us from the power of our enemies." All right, there's just so many things wrong with that. Right? What are some things that are wrong with this whole situation? They asked the question, but they never stopped to get the right answer. What was the right answer?
Because they didn't ask for his permission in the first place.
Right. They weren't going out on his terms. They had all the foreign gods among them. They were not serving God. They were not obeying him in going out. So it was similar to what we read about in the Torah portion about Israel saying, "We're going to go up and take the land," without God being with them. That was mistake number one. What was mistake number two? They decided they're going to bring the ark. As if it had any power in itself. The ark was not. It was like, we need to have the support of the President of the United States in this project. So we're going to... He's not... we don't know him. We don't have any authority to call him. But I know this guy works at the White House, so we're going to bring his chair. We're going to sit his chair right there, and that's going to give us the authority to accomplish this program. It's like, what? Say what? The chair doesn't have any power. But it represented their idolatrous thinking. Right? They're thinking they've gotten their eyes off of the invisible God. They're already serving all these idols. And so now they're thinking the chair has got power.
Maybe they thought God would go along with it once they got followed.
Yeah, they would kind of drag his throne into the battle and hoping that he would come with the throne. But it doesn't work that way. See, in the Torah portion, they didn't bring the ark, and they got defeated. Maybe they thought, well, this time we're going to bring the ark, and we'll see what happens. After all, I'm sure they're thinking, the ark is going to protect itself. God's going to protect his ark, and then thereby protect us. Verse 4, so the people sent to Shiloh, and from there they carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of Hosts, who sits above the cherubim. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. Yeah, that's going to make it better. Right, those guys are definitely going to add a sprinkle of holiness to this whole proceeding. They were priests, and they should have known better. They should have said stop. You know, had they their heart been right before God, they should have prayed to God to find out what God had wanted to do, and maybe like Moses, they would have just refused to let the ark leave Shiloh, leave the tabernacle. Verse 5, as the ark of the covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout, so that the earth resounded. When the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, they said, what does the noise of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews mean? And they understood that the ark of the Lord had come into the camp. So they knew. They knew. The Philistines were afraid, for they said, God has come into the camp. And they said, woe to us, for nothing like this has happened before. Woe to us, who shall deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods who smote the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness. All right, so what was their misunderstanding here?
It wasn't God, it was the God.
The God. So what does that point to as far as the Jewish people were concerned? All right. And Philistines had ruled over them for decades. We had, in the last part of the book of Judges, we had Samson, who tried and failed to deliver them from the Philistines. And they were over them for 20, 30, 40 years. So what does this say about the Jewish people here? They were in the Jewish people's country. They're in Israel. They were ruling over the people of Israel. And yet,
the God of Israel couldn't, so that think of them as just, I'm not sure what you're saying.
If you had, okay, I'm thinking in terms of the Vikings. Stay with me on this. And the Vikings were pagans, and they went up against the British and the Irish, who were followers of God, and they took away raiders who were, they liked to raid churches and monasteries because that's where the money was, the precious stuff was. And they took back the people from those areas who tended to be believers, and it was those people they brought back who taught them about the one true God and eventually won the Vikings to the Lord. Here you had the Philistines in the land of Israel, with the Jewish people as their slaves, but still in there, but yet somehow they had never heard about the God of Israel. That all those Jewish people that they subjugated, that were servants, that were their slaves in their households, in their minds, and everywhere else, had not told them about the true God.
But they did know about the ark.
But they did know about the ark. Right. The reputation of the ark came through because I guess everybody in that area was talking about the Exodus from Egypt, but the Jews were not explaining to them anything about the God who delivered them from Egypt, because their character at that point was such so that they could not, they were not even thinking about the one true God. They were off in all these other gods and who knows what else. And so the Philistines knew nothing at all about God.
But they believed there was some magical power in the ark because that came across from them.
Yes.
Their slaves.
Yes. That somehow they got this hint, this rumor that the ark was powerful. That the ark itself had thought that they thought that the ark and God were somehow mixed up together. So they could have one of two reactions. What two reactions would you think they could have?
The Philistines.
Mm-hmm.
The one was, we can get that ark, we have some power.
That's right. We're going to steal their god. Right. We're going to steal their powerful object. Their talisman, I think, is the technical term for this thing. Their item. Right? And the other reaction, which is what the people of Israel had wanted them to have, would have been to run! Run! God's here! Run! Drop everything! Run! Run for the border! Run! Get out! Verse 9. Take courage and be men, O Philistines, or you will become slaves to the Hebrews, as they have been slaves to you. Therefore be men and fight. So they chose door number one. Right? They're going to fight and take this thing. So the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated, and every man fled to his tent. And the slaughter was very great, for there fell of Israel 30,000 foot soldiers. How many fell the first time?
One.
Four. Just four. So it went from 4 to 30. So it just went from bad to worse. Verse 11, and the ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. Now a man of Benjamin ran from the battle line and came to Shiloh the same day, his clothes torn and dust on his head. When he came, behold, Eli was sitting on his seat by the road, eagerly watching, because his heart was trembling for the ark of God. So the man came to tell it in the city, and all the city cried out. When Eli heard the noise of the outcry, he said, "What does the noise of this commotion mean?" Then the man came hurriedly and told Eli. Now Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were set so that he could not see. The man said to Eli, "I am the one who came from the battle line. Indeed, I escaped from the battle line today." And he said, "How did things go, my son?" Probably the word "escape" would have been a clue. Then the one who brought the news replied, "Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there has also been a great slaughter among the people. And your two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God had been taken." When he mentioned the ark of God, Eli fell off the seat backward outside the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died, for he was old and heavy. Thus he judged Israel 40 years. So it was interesting to refer to Eli as a judge of Israel. That kind of says that there were things that were happened in the time of judges, and there were judges of Israel that we have no record of. We don't know what Eli did to be called a judge of Israel. Verse 19, now his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was pregnant and about to give birth, and when she heard the news that the ark of God was taken and that her father-in-law and her husband had died, she kneeled down and gave birth, for her pains came upon her. And about that time of her death, the women who stood by her said to her, "Do not be afraid, for you have given birth to a son." But she did not answer or pay attention. And she called the boy Ichabod, saying, "The glory has departed from Israel, because the ark of God was taken, and because of her father-in-law and her husband." She said, "The glory has departed from Israel, for the ark of God was taken." So they didn't know if it was ever coming back. Right? That God, they thought God might have just abandoned them. That this was it, they were done. That maybe God was going to bless the Philistines now. Who knows? All right, so what can we take away from this? The first thing that I've noticed about this is this whole idea of them taking the ark into battle instead of dealing with their own personal issues and their own personal holiness. How do people do that today? Or do people do that today? What do you think?
They take things in their own hands.
When they take it in their own hands, they cover it in some way with what they know of the Lord. You know?
They sprinkle it with something. They either you can take verses out of context and use that to justify your actions, even if your actions are wildly against what God would have. You can paper it over with piety. In other words, you can fill your life with the outward signs of holiness, of piety, the signs of piety, without ever becoming holy yourself. You can become an avid churchgoer. You can fill your house with religious tchotchkes of various sorts, but yet still not have God the heart of that God desires you to have, and going forth in your own power to try to accomplish something, it's not going to work. It's not going to build the results God desires. Sometimes I struggle with it, looking at the churches that build into mega churches doing things in some very interesting ways. There's people out there I used to get, I think I still get from time to time, you get the advertising mailers in the mail at your house, where it's got this book of coupons to do things. There's this pastor's booklet that's all full of, fundraising schemes and, pews and ways to, make your church videos on, DVDs on attracting visitors to your church and all sorts of things, how to market your church and things like that. And there's an awful lot of that. There's a whole industry, many industries even, that have grown up around churches. And you'd be amazed all the things that you can get, all the knickknacks and all the programs and all the consultants and all the rest of it that are there. And sometimes churches don't grow just because it's not their time or it's not God's will. But even in a situation like that, people can push it and push it, push it, push it, push it, push it through some of these means that are ways of trying to accomplish results that kind of look like what God would have in mind, but not by God's methods. Some of them are, some of it, okay, yeah, maybe some marketing and whatever, but when that becomes deceptive and that becomes the whole goal of the whole church, it gets a little dicey. And when you're doing it to cover over the fact that the church is dead as a stone spiritually, then that's a whole different matter, and people do that. You can have a huge church, but absolutely dead as a doornail. I don't know, I've never seen a doornail. Dead as a brick, how's that? And you have these things that are, you would think with a church that size in the community, that the community would just be a shining example of God's holiness. Right? And it's just not happening. So what's going on? Why do you have this mega church in the city, but yet no sign of its presence, that its members tread softly once they leave the church? Or maybe they don't walk in a godly way at all. It's just, why isn't there an impact? Why isn't there an impact? It's true in our own lives, too, that we have to be very careful that we're going to do things God's way, even if it means waiting. Even if it means waiting to accomplish God's plan. And waiting can be painful. And they were asked to wait in the wilderness for 40 years. Now, that was a judgment. But still, I guess a better example is in the... even then they were disobedient. I was thinking more of like Paul. He came to be a believer, and then he left the scene for a while. Moses, who was out in the desert raising sheep and learning to be patient. You know, something that oftentimes God causes us to wait just so that we can learn to trust Him. Either in the waiting, we find out that it's not His will to do whatever it was in the first place, or we find out that God has a much better idea than we had in accomplishing those objectives once it comes around to it. So these people in Samuel, they didn't have God's holiness. They went out. It's like they went out without any weapons. They went out without the power of God against the Philistines. And as a result, they got trounced. They got trounced. So, let's not get trounced. Let's not get trounced. Let's close in prayer. Dearest God and Father, I thank You for the way in which You have moved in the lives of godly people and even whole nations. Teach us to recognize the signs of when You desire us to move, when You desire us to stay put and wait for You, that we might be part of the exciting plan that's going on all around us, but more importantly, that You can refine and sanctify us to make us into the people that we need to be in order to more fully glorify You and raise up the precious name of our Messiah, Yeshua. Amen.